Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I am your humble host today, Michelle Berquist, and I am super excited. We have an interesting topic today, and I'm going to say a powerful topic, but we're going to be talking about unconscious bias and how to understand, relate, and shift your perspective. I am also delighted to share that our leading lady today is a woman I very much respect. I'm going to call her the Fear Whisperer because she is one of our past Sue Talk presenters. And I want all of our listeners to just help me welcome Sahar Andrade, who is she's a master in diversity, inclusion, and on leadership. And she's a consultant and a speaker and an amazing thought leader. And she is the founder of Sahar Consulting. So, Sahar, I hope that was a nice build-up, but say hello to all of our listeners.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I'm actually delighted to be here today and to speak about a subject that is part of our daily life, daily hour, daily minute, and that some people might not know it as unconscious bias, but this is something that we live in within ourselves, that we see right in others every single moment, and especially now with everything going around us. You know, it's such an important subject to talk about, and we need to understand it, because I like to look at the root of the problems or issues that we have so we can solve them. Because if we keep looking at the symptoms and just try to treat the symptoms always come back if we don't treat the root. And that's like
my
philosophy in
life. I love it. And I think for our listeners, if you can help us become conscious of what unconscious bias is, I think so many people don't even know what it is. I mean, kind of share with our listeners, what is unconscious bias, you know, in the short version, and then we're going to unpack it and talk about how to overcome it.
Absolutely. In short, unconscious bias is our blind spot. So our blind spot is when our perceptions is basically of what is around us. We are wired to see patterns in thing and group things together as a survival tool. But we need to remember that our perceptions are shaped by our past experiences, by direct and indirect messages from our parents, from our teachers, from our groups, from our tribes, from our family. And we deduce from the information that is available to us. And unfortunately, this information is often biased because we don't perceive objects in isolation, but we kind of combine them together so they appear clearer to us. What that means? Meaning that we see things as we are, not as they are. And that's why our perceptions come very important. And that's what it's like when we drive a car, you know, we always have a blind spot in the mirror. And that's why when we, before changing lanes on the freeway or even driving on a street, we need to actually shift our neck to the other side to make sure that nothing is in that blind spot. Because if we get into an accident, you know, it might not have been our fault, but it's 100% our personality. Responsibility. And that's why it's important to understand what unconscious bias is. And let me talk about this for a second. When
sure.
we say that, people become very defensive and like, I don't have any unconscious bias, you know, because they feel like they could be shamed if they feel that. And I just want to let everybody know that we all no matter who we are, no matter how open-minded we are, we all have unconscious bias. It's what we do with it that counts.
You just stopped me on that one. I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty powerful. Because, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, there's all, I mean, the media doesn't help, I think, many times, you
no.
know, because of what they sensationalize. You know, in corporate America, you know, I'm going to give you kind of like what I see as the challenge with all this is that I know there are people in corporate America that will say, well, gosh, you know, people are just too sensitive today. You know, it's all about everybody winning and nobody loses and, you know, everybody's just too sensitive. Yet, it's like, I think what's amazing in the times I've heard you speak about it and knowing you, it is when it can become from unconscious to conscious, our behavior changes. And it makes me want to be a better leader and a better person because I'm more aware. But I don't know if that's right or wrong, and I'm curious for you, what do you see as the footprint and the kind of the response of companies? Like, are they open to kind of like dealing with unconscious bias? Is it something that's kind of a hard to get your arms around that companies are not really understanding what it is? Or what do you find? Because this is the lane you work in, and I'm curious what you find with companies and their employees and their teams and unconscious bias. What's the kind of trend?
There are so many shades of gray. You want to call it. There are so
many. Not to mention,
many...
I asked 20 questions. Sorry about that.
Yeah, right. There are so many different responses and reactions. So there are organizations that realize that they got stuck or they have actual issues in employee engagement because of unconscious bias, or they're not attracting, they're not retaining, they're not recruiting diverse talents because of unconscious bias. And they want to do actually something about it. Maybe they don't know what the reason is, but they hire people like me, consultants, that will do something like a culture audit and kind of find solutions to the problem. And there are some that do training or do awareness about unconscious bias just so on the surface they are, oh, we care about inclusion. And some are totally tone deaf about it. And some are like, yes, we know we have it, but it's not our priority right now. So there are so many different responses, and it's very sad because till today, people look at diversity as numbers or as a compliance issue. And it's actually more of a human capital issue. It's more of a productivity issue. It's more of a revenue issue. People need to stop thinking about training for diversity, inclusion, and unconscious bias as an expense. It's actually an investment. Because when you accept people for who they are, not who we think they are or not who we want them to be, they feel valued, they feel they belong, and so they will build great teams, they will have great communication, conflict will be reduced, you will reduce your absenteeism, you will reduce your turnover that costs a lot of money, you will reduce your lawsuits, and you will increase attraction, retaining, recruiting, that will increase productivity, meaning that you have higher revenues.
I love that. I mean, describe, I know, because I know you do this all the time, but, you know, give me, if you can, give our listeners an example, you know, of a company that you went to either train or consult on unconscious bias. And what I'd love for you to share with our listeners, it's like, what was it that was brought you in? What did the company see as the need? You know, what did you do? And you can choose to say the company or not. And how was the company better off? Because I think that's what, you know, so many people get their arms around. I agree with you. It's like if we have to do something as business leaders, you know, I kind of push back a little bit. But if I'm going to benefit where my organization is more profitable, more cohesive, has a better reputation, now it's like, you know, we can be all in as business leaders. So I'm curious about an example, because I know you do a lot of this work in organizations and municipals, right? I mean, government and city and county. So give us an example of where you were brought in and what the outcome was.
Okay, I'm not in the liberty to share the name of the organization, but
sure.
I can tell you what kind of so in a certain government agency in one of the departments, they saw that almost everybody looked the same, and the silos were on the rise, and the productivity mm-hmm. was not really happening. You know, the whatever they had for succession planning, whatever they had, you know, for their stars to grow was not happening. You know, and people were just leaving and going to other departments. Stars of that department were leaving and going to the department, and they could not understand why. So we went in and we did an audit of all that, and we found out that the managers, almost all of them, looked like each other. And they will just unconsciously give the leadership development training, the assigned tasks and projects to people that looked like them and felt like them as well, unconsciously. And it was gender-wise, almost age-wise, thoughts-wise, you know, and that's why it was becoming more silos. So there are experiments that have been done, not necessarily us, but other in other ways. Like, for example, it has been tried before that when you present resumes, you hold on the names of the resumes. So when people are actually looking at the resumes, they don't know if it's a female or male. They don't know if they what kind of background they are, because the names are usually an indication of what your ethnicity or race is. And we make sure that everybody has like 10 to only 15 years of, and this is something that I need to let everybody know. Please, on your resumes, no matter how much experience that you have, do not put anything past 15 years, because people can make 1 plus 2 equals 3, and they can kind of know what your age is, because unconscious bias can actually include ageism. And that can work, unfortunately, against you, again, because of unconscious bias. So once we did this culture and we implemented steps on how to overcome that unconscious bias and how to let people realize that maybe this is something that we need to think about, and maybe we can change our way to do this, and maybe, you know what, the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing expecting different results, you know? So it
it is.
It took a while, it did work, you know. And in another place, we tried it, and it didn't work because people were not accepting the change, you know. And
it is interesting, though. I was going to say, go back to the hiring for a moment, because I know there's a story, and I know you know it, probably have many examples, but the orchestra that when they would recruit violinists or something, they actually had them audition behind a screen, and how much of a difference that made, that it really helped with women, you know, getting in the orchestra, right? I mean, we don't even realize we're doing it, and that's what I think is amazing, even on the hiring. I didn't know companies were, like, not having names on the resumes, you know?
Yeah, it. You know what? Let me tell you something really quick about unconscious bias. People think that unconscious bias has to do with your color, or maybe your accent, or, but actually, unconscious bias goes beyond that. Unconscious bias has to do with weight. So if you are overweight, you know, and another less, a person skinnier, and you can have the same exact talent, or maybe you, as an overweight person, I can have even a little bit better skills. Guess who gets hired?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Well, but look at the assumptions of that, Sahar. Look at the assumptions, because I'm just going to, like, publicly disclose. I'm a pretty big girl, you know, and I've never let my weight hold me back. But I do know it's like
I'm the same way.
Right, and you're hiring. You don't even think about it. But what is the assumption? You don't know the person and they're overweight. You're thinking, are they lazy? It's like, are they unhealthy? You know, you don't know.
Exactly.
But it's like those are those things in your head that maybe aren't conscious, but it's what we think about. And that's the part that I'm like, gosh, you know, we can be more aware. Sorry, I had to go down that lane.
No, that's okay.
I don't think think about that.
No, because, for example, weight, height, skin color, accent, gender, clothing, disability, body language, ethnicity, attractiveness, height, sexual orientation. You know that there are studies that have been made. They found out if two male that share the same exact like race or ethnicity and talent and everything. One of them is 6'2", and the other one is 5'10". Most probably the 6'2 will get hired, and if you are comparing salaries, the 6'2 will have 15% more salary.
Wow.
Okay. It's the same thing like when a position becomes available in an organization and there are two candidates for it, you know, a male and a female, and the female just got pregnant or just got married, they would not even think about offering her the job because in their mind, oh, she's gonna get pregnant, or she, you know what, the job demands a lot of travel and probably she's not going to be able to do that, so we're not going to ask. They don't even ask her if you can do it or you can do it. They will just eliminate her from the get-go. But before I say that, I need to say that not every organization is like that. No matter where we are, even in groups of diversity, like the same group people in the same group of people that are the same, there are always differences. So I'm not here stereotyping all organizations, but I'm just, since we are talking about unconscious bias, I'm just talking about examples that we can learn from as a framework. I'm not saying that every single organization is like that. Just to be clear.
Right, and I know we're kind of short on time. You know, these are short, you know, interviews, Sahar. So, you know, what could you do if you work for an organization, whether you're a leader or, you know, a team member, or if you're, you know, an employee and you work at an organization, what can you do to kind of be, you know, to shift your perspective or just, you know, relate differently or be more conscious of it? I mean, there are some strategies that you could share with our listeners and what we can do individually just to change the perspective and change our results?
Absolutely. The one thing that we need to start with ourselves, so for example, we need to understand that unconsciously, because this is how our brain is built to keep us in our comfort zone, because the first function of our brain is to protect us and to defend us, and nothing is no way better done than keeping us in our comfort zone. So we have preferences of people that sound like us, that look and dress like us, that have similar hobbies, or appeal physically fit and well-prepared, or went to the same college or have the same education or even same sex, race, religion, conviction, but we have bias unconsciously towards people that seem weak or unhealthy, that look or sound different than we are, that might have different values and principles, that might have different backgrounds, different education, that maybe we feel that we are hard to relate to because maybe we don't have the same interest. And I'm going to share really quick before we leave something that happened personally. Like, we were interviewing someone for executive assistant, and there was a person that came in that was on a wheelchair, and we looked at each other and we said, oh, on a wheelchair, quadriplegic.
Oh, wheelchair. Got it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we were like, okay, you know, that's you know, right away in our brain, we alienated that person before they even start speaking, you know, because, okay, the position has typing, you know, and how we're going to do that. And we wanted mainly someone that will type things that maybe are not in the front office, but they will have, like, it was like a lawyer's office, and they had to just write reports or transcription for things. And, you know, we told the person that, you know, you're going to have to type. And they said, yes. And they pulled something from their pocket with their teeth. It's like a little, like a straw or something that was like in metal. And they started typing like crazy. But the first thing that came into our mind that, oh, they're not going to be able to do it.
Oh, so wow.
These are things, you know, that. So let's talk about, you said you wanted some of the, how can we actually do a few things that we can solve the problem with. First and foremost, self-awareness. Because remember, everything starts with us and ends with us. So we need to actually identify our blind spot. And I'm going to give a resource to people that are listening. UCLA has actually Harvard has an implicit bias survey that you can take online for free. So if you Google implicit bias Harvard survey, you can take it and you will be surprised with the results. I was surprised with my results, and that can give you an idea about are you biased against or what are you biased with, because bias can be positive or negative. So
right.
At least it will give you something that you can start with. It will let you we need to ask ourselves to be self-aware where our feelings are coming from towards that person. Are we feeling guilty? Are we feeling shameful? And where did I learn that? A reliable source. Do I know people that look that way that are different? Did I learn what I feel from someone that looked that way? Because most of unconscious bias is actually a gut reaction to a memory, to something that we have seen even on a movie. You know, we read an article on the newspaper, or we had a neighbor that reminded us of our cousin that we don't like, you know, or an older person that reminded me of my grandmother that I adore. So that's all, it's a gut reaction to whatever we have, to a memory that we have. When we react in unconscious bias, we don't react to the person in front of us, but of the perception of who they are, based on our memory that we have in our brain. So we always need to remember that. So when we get a knee-jerk reaction, we should stop for a second, not react, and observe what will be our reaction. So the first thing is self-awareness. And then make sure that we recognize that it's normal to have unconscious bias. I mean, this is how our brain has been created. So it's not like, not be shameful about it, but it's what you do with it. This is the most important part. It's like anger. We all have it. It's what we do with it. We need,
right,
on purpose, to slow down our decision-making so we can be aware of the bias and we can reduce its power to actually shape our decisions. Number four, if we have a diverse team, we are lucky enough and blessed enough to have a diverse team around us, we need to seek multidimensional feedback. And this way we have a diversity of thought. And most importantly, we need to build trust, making small changes over time. You know, trust is not built overnight, but it can be built by reaching out to people that are different and be sincere about it. Because if you're not, people will find it in a second. Provide education in your organizations, you know, either training, either little videos every now and then, even brown bag lunches. And one of the things that I always say, build the bridge with the person that is different. Find common ground, even if it's, we are different in everything except that we own a pet, we own a dog or a cat. And believe it or not, such a small bridge that you build between two people can actually start a conversation, and you can start looking at the other person. They're not that different after all. We share this. So this is what I call building the bridge. And also we can as an organization, build opportunities or create opportunities to build relationships with people, like maybe consciously mix people in projects and tasks that come from different backgrounds, like cross-organizational tasks and projects. And this way we discourage silos and cliques in our organizations. When someone acknowledges bias, we cannot or we should not blame them or shame them. Actually, we should appreciate them because at least they have the courage to say, you know what, okay, I'm wrong, you know. It's important to build respect also in communications with other people. Try to have an open mind and not being defensive. Like if I did something that was wrong, I I guess I mature to the point now where I can listen without getting defensive. Either I agree with it or I don't agree with it. I don't need to get defensive. Just listen for it, because in our worst critics, we can always learn something. And then right. learn that our brain has something that we call neuroplasticity, where we can actually create new mental paths if we really work on it. You know, so if we stop for a second, take a deep breath, and change, you know, our mind. It's like when you drive on a highway and then you decide, you know what, I forgot that I need to do this. So you just start your flasher, go to the right, and exit. So it takes you a minute to do that. And once you do that, you build that habit. You know, it's not that difficult to do, but it takes time. And most of all, it takes a will to do that. We need also to realize that we have assumptions about what's right and what's acceptable or not based on who we are. And we need to remember that people do things that make sense to them even if it doesn't make sense to us. Because we all grew in different environments, so who are we to judge anyone? We don't want to be judged, so I don't understand how we can judge people if we don't want to be judged. We need to educate ourselves about different cultures and people and maybe ask questions. One of the most important things that we need to build in ourselves is empathy, meaning like putting ourselves in other people's shoes without feeling right. sorry for them, without feeling sorry, without having that need to fix them or change them. Just feel what they go through. That's it. And then accept people, not tolerate people. Accept people. Tolerate people, meaning that you just are putting up with them. And sooner or later, that's treating the symptom, not the root. But if we learn to accept that there are differences that I don't have to agree with, that I don't have to apply, but I agree that there are differences and I'm okay that there are differences, I respect your difference, then we'll be in a lot better world environment, not only organization environment, but a world environment, accepting that there are differences even if we don't agree with them. And then the last thing that I would say is to create a culture of inclusion, that we add more people, and inclusion actually add more people, not subtract people. So we need to include people that are younger, people that are older, people that are heavier in weight, people that are less in weight, people that are tall, people that are short, females, males, different religions, different ethnicity, different even ways of communication, different styles of working, different education, because when we do that, we actually add. We do not subtract. That's my
those are pretty powerful.
About the solution.
Those are powerful. I mean, I'm going to ask you one final word because I know, you know, two questions, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, but one, what got you into this as a specialty? I mean, I'm really curious. Was it just you saw a need and you said, you know, I think this is something important? I mean, it's not where, you know, you see people specializing in this every day, and I know this has been your specialty, but what brought you into, you know, being such a thought leader on diversity and inclusion?
Growing up in the environment that I grew up, like I shared in my Sue talk, moving every 4 years into a new country, I was always the new kid on the block. And I was always the weird kid or the different kid or we don't know if we're going to accept her kid. And, you know, I was overweight as a child, you know, so it was very hard for me to be accepted, to be included. And I know how it felt. I'm blessed that all that gave me strength rather than making me feel frustrated or depressed or angry or even like being bitter. Actually, it grew who I am. And when I started, went, you know, to medical school and I studied psychiatry, I started putting things together. Why people do this? And I knew that people that did this didn't do it because they wanted to personally hurt me. They did what they knew best. And growing in different cultures, I learned how not to judge anybody, to accept everybody, no matter how different they are. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that that's not how the world worked. So I wanted to make sure that I will try to let everybody include everybody, even if the change will come one person at a time. I will do it till the day I die.
I love it. Well, I mean, it's an amazing mission, and I've actually watched you in action where I've interacted with people, and I've always been, wow, didn't even think of it where, you know, you do it in such a, I guess, sensitive is not the right word. I'm trying to think of just the methodical way that you kind of say, hey, maybe you would think about this as far as how you bring it up, bring up something in conversation. And I'm like, you know, that takes a very special talent. So you are quite all that. I know you are the fear whisperer, but I also know you're expert at this. And I will ask if anybody, you know, wants to reach you, Sahar, how would you like them to reach you? Because I think this is a big topic. It is something we all deal with. And, you know, it's not about being more sensitive. I mean, I think you shed some great light today. But how would you like people to reach you if they want more information
sure.
or to connect with you?
And, yes, it's not about being more sensitive, but it's about being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Being a human being, like we were created to be. So if someone wants to get hold of me, my website is actually Sahar Consulting. So it's www.sahar consulting.com. And I have my other website also is www.reinventyourselftogreatness.com. So they can reach me on either or. I have forms where they can connect me or they can just email me from my website.
Well, you know, I think you're amazing. Awesome information. And please, to all of our listeners, check out some things that Sahar has going on. I know she really has a focus on helping women with reinventing themselves to greatness, because we all want to be great, right, Sahar?
We are and great. We just want to be greater.
Exactly. But at any rate, I think this is an amazing subject. So, you know, go out there and, you know, let's have a better kind of understanding and, you know, let's be conscious as opposed to unconscious. So, Sahar, thanks for being our leading lady. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners. We love your loyalty. We're here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. I'm delighted to announce that Eric Kaufman, who is going to be our leading man, by the way, on Monday, is we are going to be hearing about the four virtues of a leader, that Cecile Baril, who hosts our Serving Up Diversity radio show, so we're back on diversity and inclusion, and Eric is the president and founder of Sagatica, but I think it'll be a great show, and I want to thank all of you for listening. It's been my pleasure to be your host. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday morning.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.